All civilian traffic is barred from streets and highways. Stay in your homes. Stay in your homes.
Live from the Forbidden Book Group studio in Stoppletown, USA, it's Necronomapod with your hosts, Mike Stoppel and Mike Moncada. Episode 64, David Wellington's 13 Bullets. The story of a female cop who must decide to embrace the vampire within. And now, a Necronomapod.
Military orders are subject to summary execution. Stay in your homes. Repeat, Comrade Channel. This is a Class 1 emergency. All civilian traffic is barred from streets and highways.
Hello, Necronomapod listeners. This is Mike. And on behalf of the other Mike, I would like to warn you and apologize for the horrible sound quality we're about to experience on this, our 64th episode. Our snowball microphone decided that the air conditioner was much more interesting to listen to than us. So we're working on that. And now another exciting episode of Necronomapod. Thanks.
So we're reading this book that I don't remember because I read it 3 weeks ago.
I know. That's your own fault.
I thought you said you were going to read it on vacation, so I started reading it.
I did. Not. But I started it right after I got back. It took me 2 days. And the book is 13 Bullets by David Wellington. Mm-hmm. I've been meaning to read a David Wellington book for some time because he actually gets his books on shelves at bookstores. There are some of the books besides Stephen King and Dean Koontz that you could buy there. And
didn't his father create the famous Beef Wellington?
Yes, he did. Yes, and also his grandfather defeated Napoleon at Waterloo, right in front of Otto. Anyway, see, now that's something for you to cut out.
And I will.
All right. Or I will not.
Or I will not.
It's your shame, and you must bear.
I must bear. I was really interested in reading the zombie books, but then, like you said a couple weeks ago, we kind of done with zombies.
I'm a little done with zombies.
I'm not, but...
I'm not totally done. I just need a break.
You need a break.
Because there's only so much you can do with a zombie.
Yeah. And vampires, we've read vampires, a couple of vampires books in the last year or so, and all to more or less a degree, they've all been kind of romantic vampires. Vampires with feelings. Even the Poppy Bright book, they're weird, strange feelings, but they were still, they had vampire emotions.
These vampires had feelings.
Yes. No.
they did.
Well, they kind of did, but they weren't, all I'm saying is that they're not sparkly in any degree.
No, they're not those kind of vampires.
It's actually kind of a great antidote to those kind of vampires. This is about as far away from that kind of vampire as you can get.
It took a little while, actually, to rewrap my mind around that kind of vampire, because the other kind of vampire kept wanting to impose itself.
Wait, that's not
what a vampire does.
With his chest like marble. Smooth and cold. And strong. Anyway, so these vampires are, they're not
feral.
They're feral, they don't fool around.
Except they do have weird fetishism. They do have obsessions.
Yeah, they're like really OCD. That scene with the hunting lodge where all the bones had been carefully arranged into piles, the skulls, all the shin bones,
and that was reminded me of the vampires in the movie with Will Smith. I Am Legend.
Oh yeah, yeah.
They reminded me of. I mean, they had their own kind of culture and their own sort of...
Yeah, and they also reminded me of the vampires in 30 Days of Night.
Yes.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, real, kind of badass.
Very animal.
Yeah, animal, real monsters.
Yes.
Yeah.
Not a classy
one
with capes and
capes over
the peak,
ruffled sleeves, and a perfume so tanky.
I started watching the Dracula from the 70s with what's his name? It was based on the play Frank Langella.
Wait a minute! I have seen that. Was that like a?
It was like 78.
It was like a BBC thing?
No, it was on. It was in the movie theater.
Oh.
It was based on the stage play that he was in.
Wow.
It was on Broadway. He had the poofiest hair. And
that's awesome. Franklin Langella.
I couldn't get even through half of it.
Oh, really?
My vampire aesthetic has moved beyond that.
Beyond the Hammer House sort of...
he's a romantic, he's definitely a romantic vampire.
Was he more romantic than, let's say, George Hamilton?
Yes. It was all those things he's doing his little vampire-y things, and you're thinking, can they see that he's a vampire? My God!
I know. I have to say, as I was, this is a book I listened to, so as I was listening to this one, one of the things that people who read a lot of horror, which I never was, but I really have become, one of the things that you get sick of is the people denying what is obvious to you as a reader. Like, you're not saying, it's like, he's a vampire, it's perfectly obvious. And this book kind of gets around that.
Well, yeah, because they're sort of in an alternative universe.
Yeah, slightly different, yeah. They're, these kind of creatures are extremely rare, but they do exist.
Right.
Yeah. So
this world could have fit nicely in Pandemonium.
Yeah, I can see that. And this is another thing that was different about this book from other books that we've been reading recently is this one was probably the highest velocity action book we've read in a long time.
It was, which is why I was bored.
Really?
Out of my mind with it, yes.
Oh, God, I loved it. I loved it. It was like
I wasn't bored,
like a speed medicine.
I wasn't bored with the action stuff. I was bored with all the stuff in between.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and it's funny, though. There wasn't as much, there wasn't a lot in between because, it starts off with, in the past, apparently, with the special agent Arkley's
Getting kidnapped,
and his big run-in with the original vampires, and his first encounter with his nemesis, Malvern, Justinian Malvern, the vampire. And so you get
that was a great scene.
It was a great scene.
He's vomiting blood up like a little, like a mother
like
robin.
A mother robin. Cheep, 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 cheep. And then so I was like, okay, wow, that's how you do it. You grab your reader and you shake them by the throat for 25 pages, and you got them.
And then fast forward.
And fast forward, 20 years or so, or however many years, and you're in that traffic stop, the drunk stop, and suddenly you're in another scene, almost like it, and it's just one chase scene or battle scene or after another, and it was pretty, and he did a pretty good job of it, I thought.
He did.
I'm used to our genre writers, these horror writers, to have a good imagination, but limited means to actually get it on the page, and so you give them some allowances. Well, at least I do. But this guy, Ben Wellington, he knows how to frame a scene and lay it out there and describe the action so it's got punch without over.
You can definitely see what's happening in the action.
Oh yeah,
scenes like you can actually picture it. It's realized. There's some action scenes you don't. Well, what just happened?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And one of my pet peeves in these kind of things is that as I'm reading it. I get the sense that the person is actually sort of transcribing a movie script. And I never got that with this book.
That could easily become a movie.
Oh, it very, very easily could be a movie, become a movie script. But the descriptions weren't written out in such a way that that I'm aware of where the camera is sitting. Which I think the last time I bought this up was when we were reading Angelology. And there was one scene where it's some chapel or other, and the author describes how light is playing across the pews and stuff like that, and you can tell exactly where the camera setup is.
There aren't those kind of descriptions in this.
There isn't. That's one of the reasons one of the things I admire about it. So
you admire it.
I admire several things about the book.
Wow.
I have not yet said that I admire the book.
But you admire several things about the book.
Yes, and that was there's a couple of them right there. Bam. What do you despise about the book?
The sheet of menstrual blood. We didn't need any of that. We didn't. Oh, yuck.
But that scene was hilarious, though.
It was funny, but good lord. It took me a long time. It's taking me. Now it's back in my brain again.
Oh, shit. The narrator who did her treatment of that scene in the audiobook is very, she's very deadpan. And, she describes it at one point, the main character, Laura Caxton's, her partner, Deanna, I think her name is, says that, yeah, it's mostly my blood, you know, because I can only paint every month or so, it's mostly my blood, but some of it's Laura's, and I was like, that's a little too much information. It's a very funny scene. The whole scene was too much information, frankly. But, you know, that's what horror is all about.
Horror is
too
about
much information.
Really, yeah. Well, yeah. Well, maybe. It depends what kind of horror.
Too much information is a flavor of horror.
It's a flavor, yes. A menstrual flavor.
Anyway.
Yeah, so... yeah, that... that whole relationship... I saw that coming a gazillion miles away.
Oh, when
that she was gonna, that her partner was gonna become a vampire.
Yeah, I saw it coming a while away, but not a gazillion miles.
I saw it like right when the half bloods or half deads were attacking, and then the house, like the first chapter or so, and then the dreams. Kept talking about the dreams. Yep. I'm like, oh yeah, she's
yeah.
So the things I liked about the book.
Sure.
Okay. I liked that the way a vampire is made is they first are sort of mentally raped.
Yes.
And then that person kills themselves.
Yeah, they have to kill themselves. Which goes back to
very interesting.
Yeah, and actually that ties into a little bit. You know, when people write vampire novels now, they sort of pick and choose from the mythology.
And there's lots of different.
Yeah, and there's lots of different ways. But that's one that people usually don't pick, is that suicides were at risk of becoming vampires, according to
Catholicism
and pre Bram Stoker vampire mythology. Which is why they were something, either buried in unhallowed ground, or they were, you know, special, you know, burial rites were observed for suicides, and that is what you have to do that in this particular book's mythology. And I thought that was, yeah, you're right, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I liked that. I liked that how there's the vampire does this hypnotic. Unreality with Laura, and she's not really sure, you know, what's real or what. I mean, that whole part of it, I really dug, and I thought that the description of that and her confusion, and that the vampire was really able to I mean, I like that psychological piece of it. Mm-hmm. That found kind of her kernel of weakness or... So I like that. I like the descriptions of the vampires and how they look, and they reminded me a lot of the Nosferatu vampire.
Sure.
Because they all go bald.
They're changed at like a really basic biological level. And just their transformation from between night and day was really horrific.
Yeah.
They basically die and decay.
Right.
And then at reconstitute. Night. Yeah. At the during the day.
Yeah, those are great descriptions that, you know, they open up the coffin and there's just be this
goo
puddle of goo and maggots and I loved that the old vampires were just these like crunchy.
Yeah, they're like a bunch of
raggy
bejeweled dates on a shish kebab.
Yeah.
Those
are great descriptions.
Yeah. There's a lot of really great, really pretty stomach churning.
When she has to thrust her hand into the I forgot what she was digging out of there. She was digging something out of
the heart?
Yeah, she was pulling out the heart. It was just gory.
It was really awesome.
Yeah. So I like those parts of the book. Sure. I like the mythology.
Yeah.
Do you like
the idea? Would you be more interested in exploring this particular, you know, world of vampires further? I mean, do you know, there's three more books.
Was this the first one?
This is the first one.
I'd like to see, I would like to go the second one and see if it's, I kind of was bored with the main character. I was more interested in Ackerley.
Yeah.
I was in Laura. I thought Laura was, I don't know. She wasn't interesting to me. I mean, and then I guess him having to throw in that she's a lesbian kind of bugged me a little bit. That in and of itself does not make her interesting.
I'm curious about that.
And actually, I was more interested in her new girlfriend. She seemed more interesting than Laura did.
Yeah, was her name Claire?
Yeah. She was like a forensic... She was like blood splatter or something.
She was Dexter.
Yeah, she was Dexter. I found her even more interesting than I did the main.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the whole lesbianism part of this book because every once in a while, one of the big things they kept talking about that the author kept bringing up, and that Laura Taxon keeps reminding herself is that vampires are unnatural. Unnatural, and that particular word is very loaded when it comes to
tell me about it.
Yeah, no kidding. It's really loaded, and I was really aware of it every time it came up. It's like, you know, vampires are unnatural, but you know, she keeps talking about people's reaction to her relationship with Deanna and her lesbianism and like Deanna's family, like her mom is, you know, seems to be kind of a boozy bitch, and Deanna's brother seems to be just sort of a mullet-headed, you know, guy driving a pickup truck. But he actually kind of comes around. He understands that, you know, that they really did love each other. It wasn't just unnatural.
I don't know if they loved each other, but that's okay.
Yeah, well, exactly. But it didn't gel for me. I don't know that.
It was like a force.
Yeah.
It felt like he was trying to force a point.
Well, yeah.
When he didn't have.
Yeah, or he was not aware.
It was too ham-handed.
Yeah, or he was not aware that there was a contradiction there that he needed to like address. My thinking on this is completely befuddled. So,
well, go ahead. Just pick through it.
Oh, I can't.
Not after this. I thought it was just a little ham-handed,
because
that's all.
Yeah, well, you were saying that just because making her lesbian does not make her interesting.
Right.
It did.
And it's all those straw horses, you know, the horrible mother and the redneck brother. Those, all those are just kind of, kind of cliche. And
pretty much.
He could have made her a lesbian and didn't have to go there.
Yeah, I just let that be.
Just let it be.
Just let that be.
Right. Yeah. Have some like good makeout sessions or something. Yeah. Some muff dive. One muff diving scene and on you go.
Actually,
Bloody muffin.
Actually, her lesbianism, her relationship with Deanna does actually play in as a one plot point. It is the reason that I can't remember the character's name now. The second or third vampire, who is the electrician, is a Hispanic electrician, who's
into lesbian pornography.
Yeah, who's into lesbian porn, and he spots them and decides that he wants to turn both of those women into vampires, so he can have a hot lesbian
vampire
three-way thing going on.
And you said they didn't have personalities.
you're right. They're just they're more feral than.
It does bring up an interesting point about what's natural and what isn't, because
exactly.
Really saying a vampire is not natural is really kind of a moot point, because that they exist in nature
is
natural.
Exactly.
You might not like it.
Yeah, the Brooklyn Bridge is natural.
I think when people say that, what they're saying is, I don't like it, or it doesn't fit my worldview. But there they are.
Yeah. Or they're saying
don't they have a right to exist? I don't know. Part of me wonders.
Exactly. You know, I mean, you prefer not to be eaten by a shark. You prefer not to be killed by a vampire. But, you know, you don't think sharks are evil. They're just hungry.
I think the thing about this, the mythology of these vampires. Mm-hmm. I just read another vampire book, so I'm getting it confused. And I want to talk about that book at the end. But,
all right.
There isn't just taking a little sip and then walking away. It's total, that vampire drinks, they drink.
Yeah.
And it gets worse the longer they are a vampire. It's much more destructive.
Yes.
So there isn't that kind of like, you take a little sip and walk away. And it has to be absolutely
fresh.
It cannot be bottled vampire or...
Yep.
True blood, or it can't be
pig's blood,
any of that. It has to be that.
Yeah.
That and only that.
Yep.
Which was a great constraint, because it made it much more horrific in a way.
Yeah, I mean, they're super powerful, but you know, it explains very clearly why the world's not overrun with vampires. If there's only a few at a time, because it's really difficult to make them.
Yeah, it's difficult to make them.
So anyway,
I liked that that the Laura, even though she didn't kill herself, that the vampire who was making her still kind of existed in her.
In her, yeah.
I thought it was interesting, and it moved things along, and you got insights. And I just to piggyback on that, I thought the way he described the mythologies and he was able to just insert things in. You weren't getting these huge kind of didactic pieces about world.
Yeah,
Professor
Van Helsing doesn't sit down and lecture.
Right. Which I really appreciate.
For half an hour,
You do get into the world quick.
Yeah.
And know what the world is, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, it was pretty deftly done. I get the sense that there's more to learn. All the way through the book, you know, Laura Caxton is constantly trying to learn things and remember them and put them into practice and learn more things from Ackerley and her experiences. And she never feels really like an expert until the very, very end, when she is really on her own. You know, it's her graduation test to becoming a full-fledged vampire slayer.
You said there was a few things you admired about the book, but were there things that drove you nuts or that you didn't like, or
nothing drove me nuts, nothing at all. When I realized the reveal that the main character was lesbian, I thought, okay, that's good, but Are you doing that for a reason, or is it just, you know, sort of a, are you pulling the lesbianism card right. out of your character deck?
And you know what? I would have been, see, it's, I think the thing that sort of pissed me off about that is, well, why didn't you have a male character who is gay?
Yeah.
Because the lesbian thing is so easy.
And super hot.
Yeah. It would have been much.
Yeah, I know. I mean, he almost can't
now win. I'm getting really pissed off.
Yeah, actually, he almost can't win because it's a male author writing from the point of view of a lesbian. And too easy. Well, it's too. I mean, even if no matter what his motives are or whatever, you cannot win because people are going to think poorly of you.
I think he should have, if he was going to really be. Right now, I'm getting drunk and angry.
Oh, Surly Mike.
This goes back to the Song of Kali. It's the same thing as you want a cheap horror thing. Kill a baby.
Yeah.
You want to be provocative. Have a lesbian.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you're gonna do it, then really do it.
No. Well, I don't know. I mean, I actually believed the character. When it
did sound a lot like a lot of lesbian relationships I know about. Kind of loveless.
Kind of lesbian bed death.
Bed death. Cheating on the side.
I don't know. Yeah, cheating on the side. First date, you go and open up a joint checking account. I'm trying to remember.
Green barrel.
Trying to remember all my lesbian jokes. That's pretty much all I got. The checking account one.
The one kooky artsy lesbian with the menstrual blood art yeah. in the back.
Actually, I have to say that the one of them was a kooky menstrual blood painting lesbian. That actually seemed kind of pissed me off.
Why?
Because that actually seems a little bit stereotypical.
It absolutely is stereotypical.
I mean, in a very unusual way, but, you know, I was like, oh, yeah, that's, you know, what's the weird artsy thing going to be with one of these is going to be an artist.
Well, what if it was the gay cop with his gay lover who was an artist with his sperm mobile or something, you know, or
you.
Right. Not sexy.
Anyway, well, yeah, that it wasn't that gambit, the lesbian, we'll call it the lesbian gambit.
The lesbian gambit
wasn't a total failure, but it was not, I would say, based just on this first book, it was not the strongest part of the book.
And I do feel that because I quickly caught on that the girlfriend was going to become a vampire,
yeah.
I thought, I don't know. For me.
Meh.
It's sort of like, okay, well, how? That wasn't interesting to me.
Yeah.
It's been done.
Yeah.
It's been done to death in a way, so.
Sure. One of the things.
I think it would have been interesting if actually Laura had become a vampire. I think it would have been.
Sure.
Very interesting.
Yeah. Who knows? Maybe that'll happen.
And I'm wondering if it's going to happen.
We'll see. One of the other things that, and maybe this is not a flaw of the book so much as
our flaw,
a weakness in my reading, but the complex web of motivations where you have all these things going on super fast, as you go through the book, you pieces start falling into place.
Okay.
But they're like kind of almost a kind of random pieces. You know, you find out that you find out what different people's motivations are. You
like
find
what?
Out, you find out who they are. Hopefully, you find out. You know, so there's three coppers at the hunting lodge. So they're looking for three vampires, and so you find out about those three vampires. You actually find out a little bit about them,
right?
By bits and pieces, and it's just sort of. You sort of cobble together the whole backstory that led up to that moment at the traffic stop when all hell breaks loose for Laura Caxton,
right.
And Art Ackerley, you know, comes into her life.
Right.
And you also find out that why, for instance, a half-dead shows his face in her window that night.
Right.
At that first traffic stop. And it's just, these pieces are sort of assembled bit by bit over the course of the whole novel. It's very carefully and thoroughly plotted.
Yes.
And it reminds me of books that I know I should just love. And I've tried to read these books and love them, but I just can't.
Like,
and those are those early hard-boiled detective novels by Raymond Chandler and Dashiell Hammett.
Yeah.
Where, you know, you start off with, you know, the what was it, the Maltese Falcon starts off with Sam Spade's his partner is dead.
Well, almost every mystery story, that's how it works.
Yeah, exactly. And I
actually like.
Yeah, I mean, right. Maybe I just, you know, I didn't come.
You're to... You're not mystery. A mystery reader.
I'm not a mystery reader. I did not come to mysteries until probably my late 30s. So.
And here I am. A couple years ago.
And here I am, 65. anyway.
Right,
but this,
you're
book,
right.
This book, well, basically has that kind of mystery plot, where all the facts are out there and you're just waiting for them to drift down from the sky, and assemble
and
themselves in front of you.
And they do.
Yeah,
I had a, I don't know if it was difficult time, but I kept thinking of our last vampire book that we read, the one.
Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter?
No. The other one. We didn't like it.
Dracula the Undead?
No. What? No, we liked that one.
Yeah, we did like that one.
No, the one with, that takes place in the Southwest. And,
Nymphos of Rocky Flats?
Right.
I hated that book.
I hated that book as well, and I have to say, I don't know why I kept thinking of that book when I was reading this book.
You know, they're not dissimilar. This is a far superior.
It's
book.
A better book,
yeah.
But it's not dissimilar.
It's
so
not
tell
dissimilar.
Me why how it's similar, because I couldn't.
How it's similar?
Yeah. How do you think it's similar? Because mine's more of an intuitive feeling that it's similar, but I can't put my finger on why I think it's similar.
I would say it's similar because of the utterly contemporary setting. Because my memory of that book is pretty dim. I remember it was by Kurt Acevedo or something like that.
Yeah.
I remember that it was trying to be gory and sexy and action packed.
And kind of a mystery.
Right.
Maybe that's why.
Yeah, and the main character, I can't remember.
And I think it was kind of, this book was kind of, had the same thing. It was trying to be gory. It was trying to
succeeding.
Be kind of sexy. Kind of. With
you
the
know,
lesbian thing.
Well, you know, he could have pushed that a lot further. And he.
He really could have.
And he didn't. He, that's one of the things I.
Which I want to thank you. Thank you for doing that. I did not want him to see any of that.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, you could have gone a little further.
There was a little Dexter-ish in this to it, too, with that, there was that tableau of the two bodies that were, their faces, the bottom parts of their faces were missing.
Oh, right.
And they were stuck together in sort of this art piece.
Yeah, a little artistic taxidermy.
Yeah, which reminded me a lot of the killers in Dexter.
Sure.
So definitely there's a derivative feeling to this book, and at this point, I don't think a vampire can be anything but...
No, this...
It's gone everywhere it can... I mean, it really has gone everywhere it possibly can go, as
people,
far as I can think of.
Yeah, I mean, writers will continue...
Might be my small mind, but...
Yeah, writers will continue to try to breathe new life into the vampire genre. And, you know...
Well, every genre, right?
Yeah, more power to them. I mean, I think it's great. I think this particular version is...
Does it breathe new life for you?
At this point, the new life that it does breathe, I would say yes, but it's a tiny little puff. There's nothing left... Now, but tiny little puffs. You know, you can tweak this little thing a little bit over here. You can tweak this little thing over here a little bit. But, you know, there's... I really don't think there's anything left.
That's what I'm wondering if that's why I was bored with it.
That might be why you were bored with it.
It's like... Yeah.
I mean, this was a good one. This is a good vampire novel for me. I enjoyed it.
Okay, so, can I just talk about the book that I've been reading?
Sure.
I just want to say that I read this book. I think it's called The Radleys. I can't remember what it's called now. But the family in it, the family of vampires, and they're called The Radleys.
Okay.
Which I have to say must have something with Boo Radley.
Sure.
But it takes place in England.
Uh-huh.
Actually, using the vampire story as sort of a story about the disintegration of the family or of a relationship, of a marriage.
Sure.
Was very interesting. It was a very interesting... It did take it to a different place for me.
Okay.
So, I think when... I think the one place maybe the vampire thing can go is if it becomes really metaphorical.
Yes. It always
is.
It always is. It always was. But yeah, you can
mine the metaphor.
You can take the metaphor and you can just stick it on to another set of meanings.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, you can do that endlessly. I wonder, I mean... You know, here I am, we had just pronounced that there's nothing new to do with vampires. And, you know, that's a complete lie. I'm completely reversed myself.
Okay.
Yeah, there's endless things you can do with vampires. I guess we're a little disappointed when we see people doing things with vampires after having read, you know, X number of books.
Some really good...
Really good books. And then we see somebody doing something... Just a little bit different, or not different freaking at all, and that's a little boring.
Well, then if you're gonna do something kind of not different, then it's really about the characters,
yes,
and the emotions,
yes.
And
yeah. For instance, I was thinking there's this book came out 2-3 years ago now by Justin Cronin called The Passage,
and
I think it might be a vampire novel. I'm not sure.
Did you read it?
No, it's huge. It is huge. It's probably 50 hours long. It's a 1,200 page book.
It's Stephen Kingish.
Yeah, it is. It's about the
King.
It's like The Stand. It's about the end of the world. It's about people gathering together after something big and bad happens. And I would suggest that we read it sometime, but maybe not right now.
Would if we could take August off,
all right,
and do it in September. Like, have take all of the summer to read it. The rest of the summer.
We'll table that.
All right. We'll go on the cellar and see what happens.
Exactly. Arm wrestling in the cellar again. All right. So in the end, like I said, I said there are things that I admire about this book, and I really actually. Talking about it now, I'm thinking about it more deeply than I have in a couple of days, after having finished it a couple of days ago, I really do like it. I do like the book, and I think I will read the next one at least.
I think I'll read the next one. I don't know. I think I'm split down the middle.
Yeah.
But I'm hard to please.
You are hard to please. I'm easy to please.
You are easy to please.
Very easy to please. I'm easy like Sunday morning. Anyway,
I think it's time for a drink.
I think it's time for a drink. Some sort of cocktail.
Yes, it is time
for a cocktail. All right, what are we drinking?
Well, delicious.
It's delicious.
And we actually are drinking it.
We actually are drinking it this time.
We always drink our cocktails.
Always, but we're especially drinking it this time. Well, this one is a little something that we call coffin juice.
Mm-hmm.
It's really simple to make.
So what is the name of that ginger ale that you got, the ginger beer?
I can't remember. It was something, they were giving away samples of it at the grocery store today, and so I had a little shot of it. and it was great.
So it's almost imperative that you find a ginger ale that has chunks of ginger in it.
Yeah,
or put chunks in it yourself.
Yeah, that you actually have to, like, you can look at in the bottle and see the sort of the ginger threads sort of floating there, and you have to turn it upside down.
But that's easy enough to do if you can't find.
Yeah.
Get a good ginger beer.
Yeah, good ginger beer, something pretty sharp. So it's real simple. So you take a pint glass, you fill it with ice. Pour in, I like 2 shots of dark rum.
We're using a nice molasses.
Yeah, real thick and syrupy. Yeah. We're using a Kraken rum because we like to release the Kraken. then just top it off with the ginger beer, the ginger ale.
And a slice of lime.
And a slice of a lemon, actually.
Lemon.
Lime would work. And you can stir it or not. I like to stir it to get the sort
I
of the,
did not like it because it had a spooky, ghostly, foggy look.
I know, because it has it layers really nicely. And it is delicious, especially in this hot, 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 hot summer.
So put the ginger beer in first and then
the rum
on top.
Yep, yep. And it's coffee juice. It's really good.
It's really good. Chin chin.
Should we head downstairs and pick up
the Might as well. It's a moot point. Let's go
down
there anyway.
I know. We have to go.
I hope you have the humidifier on because it's so freaking humid out right now.
I know.
Something about mold. Let's go. Yep, it's moldy down
Molded
here.
Molded mushrooms. What? Is that a morale?
Oh.
Ooh, look,
it's
portobellos.
Too late for morels.
Portobellos. Shiitake.
So let's do it.
We discussed it. We let's do it. We're going to read Justin Cronin's The Passage, and we're going to take a while to do it. So if you don't hear from us until September, it's because we're reading that book.
Right.
It's a big one. One of the questions I think we're probably going to end up asking is if it's horror.
We should probably take notes.
Yeah, I'll take notes. I take notes on all of my books.
You liar.
Always.
Yeah.
So that's what we'll do.
Say the name again.
The Passage. Justin Cronin. Cronin.
All right. That's the easiest discussion we've ever had.
Very simple. Let's climb up out of here.
All right. So I wish the hell I could remember the name of that book I was reading, but...
You know, if I didn't tell you what the name of the book is that we're discussing, you probably wouldn't know, would you? I find that fascinating. You are not the only person that I know who can read a book, freaking love it, and not be able to tell me what the title is or the author.
I'm not a name person.
You're not a name person.
I've never been. I can be in a crowd and see somebody that I met once 30 years ago and will remember them and remember everything about them.
Except their name.
This is why I was a horrible teacher. I taught for a year and I could not remember my students' names at the end of the year. Except the ones that stuck out, you know.
Yeah.
But the rest, the status quo.
Yeah. So if you remember their names, they were either blessed or doomed.
That's true. The gifted and the cursed.
Well, I got nothing else about this book. I'm glad you read it. I'm not inclined to discuss.
What's the next one in the series?
I think it's 99 Coffins.
Okay.
Yeah.
I might read that before I read The Passage.
Sure. Sure. You know, I might too. Actually, here's a confession. You know what I'm going to read next?
No.
I'm reading it.
Harry Potter.
No. I've set it myself the task to understand the conservative mind.
Oh, dear. So...
I'm reading all of Ayn Rand's books. So I read the
following. I don't even know if I could call it conservative.
It's, Ayn Rand may or may not be conservative. She is.
Which conservative?
But she is a deity to a certain branch of the intellectual branch of the GOP. Rand Paul's name.
Ayn Rand Paul,
yeah. he says it's not, wasn't named after Ayn Rand, but I prefer to think that he was.
I don't believe that. Again, a lie.
And Alan Greenspan, you know, the former head of the Federal Reserve.
An Ayn Randian?
Yeah, he was one of her followers. He was like, like, you know, one of her secretaries. Yeah, I never knew that. Yeah. So
you must read her play then too. The Night of January 16th.
I might. Well, I've read The Fountainhead already, and now I'm going to read We the Living.
I have read We the Living. Okay. I read Atlas Shrugged.
And then I'm going to read Anthem, which is really short.
I have read Anthem.
And then Atlas Shrugged is for next summer.
I have not read The Fountainhead, and I directed the play.
Did you really?
Oh, yeah. So I am well...
You are well-versed.
In Ayn Rand.
Yeah.
Yes.
I've
also seen the interview with Tom Schneider on the late, what was it called? The Late Late Show?
The Late Late Show? Oh, that'd be interesting.
It was like one of her last TV interviews from the 70s.
Wow. And I also want to... There's a movie based on her romantic life called The Passion of Ayn Rand that I'm going to see. And there's also a biography that I have on audio.
You know, actually, We the Living, I thought was pretty okay. Anthem, you want to just strangle yourself, but it's so freaking obvious.
Yeah.
The Fountainhead, no, Atlas Shrugged, that's the one I took with me when I was traveling in Europe.
Couldn't do it?
Well, what I would just do is, after I would read, I'd rip off that part of the book and throw it away because it's thick. It's just boring. Like you're just getting these long speeches with doctrine. And
that's what I hear. I'm very...
She's not a very... But she wrote We the Living right after she got...
I think so, too.
After she escaped Russia.
Yeah.
So it has a little bit more juice to it.
Yeah. And I enjoyed reading The Fountainhead. I can see what is reprehensible in it, but it's kind of a potboiler.
I haven't read The Fountainhead.
Yeah, wasn't too bad. It's about an architect.
Yes, I hear you.
So anyway, so those are my horror. That's my horror reading. I'm gonna read We the Living before I jump into the passage. So there you go.
There you go.
Anyway, I got nothing else. We both saw the new Harry Potter movie a couple nights ago.
Awesome.
Super great. Really loved it.
I can't wait to see it again.
Yeah, I'll probably see it in 3D this next time.
Yeah, it'd be good in 3D. I would like to see in the theater where they have a brighter bulb.
Yeah,
because I think they chinched on the bulb on that one.
I think it was pretty.
And
pretty
I want one where there isn't special ed people running around and little children screaming.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, there's a long bus and a short bus at the theater.
Just a little too much
commotion. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you think the bulb was dark too? I thought
the bulb was dark.
I mean, that movie was. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of a dark palette that what's his face uses.
Yeah.
But you need stop chintzing on the bulb.
Yeah. Yeah,
exactly. But I'm sure that theater's losing money, so that's why they.
That theater won't be in business by the time Harry Potter 8 comes out.
No, I think my prediction is this.
Uh-huh.
Wait 5 or 6 years, they're going to remake all those movies.
They could.
And they probably should. I bet they will. Or I bet you they will. I bet you anything, they'll remake those movies.
Not in 5 or 6 years.
Maybe 10 years.
I would say 10.
In 10 years.
Yeah. I mean, when did...
They will reboot it.
When did Total Recall come out? 92? 93?
That sounds about right.
Because it's being remade. It's coming out next spring.
And yes. Yes.
And you know what the worst part is? They already have my money. I'm totally going to go see that thing.
I like Total Recall. One of my favorite movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, especially Warner Brothers is greedy.
Yep.
And there's a whole new technology. The first two movies, technology is so much better. You can go back to those movies and laugh at the Quidditch scene, especially. Horrible computer CGI, horrible CGI. So I think they will remake it.
I will go see it.
And maybe they'll do it as animation. I don't know.
They could. They could do it. They could do it all with Legos.
But you heard it here, because they know a good thing.
When they do it, they're gonna have to pay you something, aren't they?
Billions. They've made billions of dollars on that movie.
I know. Franchise. Honestly, they could turn around and make the next. They can make part one again next year. That money is just laying on the ground for them to pick up.
You mean the first book?
They could remake the first movie.
And here, mark my words, they will take the longer books, they will break those into multiple parts.
Yeah, I
wish they should have done.
They're kicking themselves that they didn't break number four and number five.
Well, seriously, they could have done this as a miniseries. Because that. It's a long book, and it's a very intricate world.
Yeah.
That. I don't know. They could have taken more time with.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. I think we've been done for quite some time.
We have.
All right. So, so what do we need? We can't just cut off his head.
How did they kill these vampires?
Well, let's
vomit blood all over.
Let's wait till morning until it gets nice and soupy.
Oh yeah, and then reach
into the goo through the maggots, pull out his heart,
and make soup.
And then make soup.
All right.
Bye.
People too.